Support for Modern Love comes from Living Proof. Living Proof.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Proof knows you have more important things to do than styling your hair. Get styles that last two times longer when you use their Prime Style Extender. Use the code PRIME at livingproof.com for a free travel size Prime Style Extender with your $20 order. We are the science. You are the living proof. And by MeUndies. Think about it. Underwear is the first thing you put on and the last thing you take off. Why would you settle for anything less than the best feeling underwear on the planet? Go to MeUndies.com/modern and see what we mean. Get 20% off your first order plus free delivery. MeUndies.com/modern.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Remember that time you wanted your significant other to be more romantic? Writer Cindy Shupack says, be careful what you wish for. Pamela Adlon, star of the hit FX comedy series Better Things, reads Cindy's essay, In Marriage, Beware of Big Boxes.
In any marriage, even the best marriage, there will come a day when you wonder why you married this person. It's hard to fathom at your wedding. This handsome tuxedoed man is publicly binding his life to yours, and you think it would have to snow inside my house before I would ever feel anything but love for this man. Well, it snowed inside my house. I'm not saying that metaphorically. I am telling you it snowed inside my house. Because a few years ago, to kick off the holiday season, my husband Ian decided, even though we didn't have kids yet, even though I never said I miss snow, that I would enjoy a snow machine. And it wasn't flaky snow. Not that I would have enjoyed flaky snow, but Ian did admit later he thought it would be flaky. That's the problem with ordering things like a snow machine online. You never can be sure if the snow will be just mildly annoying or marriage-ending annoying. Instead, the snow was sudsy, like a washing machine was overflowing in our upstairs loft and spewing suds down into the living room, where I was flipping through a magazine in front of the fire, having been instructed not to peek while Ian set up the big surprise. I have to admit, I had a bad feeling about the big surprise. It came in a big box, and there's not much I can think of that a woman would want that comes in a big box. Chocolate and jewelry come in small boxes. Clothes come in relatively small boxes. They say good things come in small packages. I say bad things come in big boxes. So, I was prepared for something I might have to feign excitement over. A new drum set for Rock Band. I'm on the fence about whether it's polite or stupid to feign excitement over a gift from your spouse. On the one hand, you want to reward his efforts and encourage future gift giving. On the other hand, that's the kind of flawed thinking that leads women to fake orgasms with men who have no idea where the clit is. And those men have no idea they have no idea. That's the danger of faking. But I didn't have time to fake a response. I had a genuine response in a voice I barely recognized that shrieked, "What the hell is happening?" Let me tell you what the hell was happening. The snow was accumulating on the floor and landing in giant clumps on the rug, coffee table, leather chair, and walls. Real snow does not land on a smooth vertical surface like a wall. But this snow did, until it slowly started to slide down, leaving a thin, wet trail in its wake, like a snail. I finally yelled, "Stop! Stop, stop, stop! Turn it off!" And amazingly, that was the first moment Ian realized the expression on my face was not joy, but horror. He turned the machine off and explained that the snow was non-staining and non-toxic and could simply be vacuumed up, which would have been nice to know earlier, but I guess that would have ruined the big surprise. I was beginning to think the big surprise was that Ian didn't know the first thing about me. Did I mention the housekeeper had just finished cleaning? I love a clean house. Ian certainly knew that about me. Maybe he thought the house would be super clean after this veritable indoor car wash. But instead, it looked like a rave had happened in our living room. And I said as much. In fact, I think I said more. And that was the moment I realized the expression on Ian's face was not remorse, but disappointment. And he was not disappointed in the snow machine, as I felt he should be as a consumer. He was disappointed in me. He had imagined us dancing in the snow. He was still looking down at me from the loft when he confessed this, so we were kind of a reverse Romeo and Juliet in more ways than one. Ian does not abandon a plan easily, so he smiled and said, "Come on, babe, one dance." And then he turned the snow back on and hurried downstairs, still hopeful the evening could be salvaged, maybe even made romantic. And I thought, what if this is one of those moments, like the night we officially moved in together in New York? Ian wanted to eat Chinese food sitting on boxes, and I wanted to unpack the boxes, and he finally said he was going to a bar if I wasn't going to be fun. And I worried I might not always be fun, and what then? Of course, the next morning, our first Monday waking up together in our new home, I regretted everything. Why was I so concerned with unpacking that I couldn't enjoy our first night in our first joint apartment? That's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. So I told Ian I thought we should have a certain number of do-over days in our relationship. We should each get, say, 3 days that don't count against you, no matter what you do. And Ian said, "Great, see you on Thursday." Okay, that was funny, but the truth is, you don't get do-overs. Certain moments in life never come back, and I worried that maybe Ian's winter wonderland was one of them. So I tried. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done, but I tried to smile and dance with Ian in the snow. Until 2 seconds later, when my shoes started to slip and slide in the suds, and I was getting faux snow in my hair, and I screamed, "I can't do it!" And as I ran outside, all I could think was, "Why did I marry this person?" I imagine Ian was standing inside in the snow thinking the same thing. And it wasn't like in the movies. We never looked at each other and started laughing hysterically. The whole night was really kind of terrible, especially during the cleanup process, which was, in fact, a process. First of all, I was surprised that I was expected to help, but I decided to pick my battles. I did not, for example, point out that the bubbles did not simply vacuum up. The vacuum mostly just pushed the bubbles around. But we did get into a disagreement about whether something can be for indoor use only. This happened because I suggested that perhaps having snow outside of our house may have been a way to go. I could have come home to the one house in Los Angeles that had snow. Or he could have put the snow machine on the roof. And then, while we were sitting by the fire, he could have pointed out the window and said, "Look, it's snowing." "It's for indoor use only," was his response. "Nothing is for indoor use only," I said. "If you can use it indoors, you can use it outdoors, unless it's so poisonous it would kill animals, and then it shouldn't be used indoors either." We finally agreed to disagree on that one, but I did have to admit that the stains on the chair and wall miraculously disappeared, to which Ian replied dryly, "It's not miraculous, it's non-toxic and non-staining." Finally, as if readying it for burial, Ian placed the snow machine back in the big box between two containers of bubble refill, which were, to my surprise, under the bathroom sink, where Ian had already stashed them for, I guess, the next time we wanted snow in the house. And then he said he would give the snow machine to someone at work who would appreciate it. I had to bite my tongue to keep from asking, who would that be? Someone who hates her house? As we carried several large trash bags of bubbles outside to the trash, Ian reminded me that sometimes I love his grand gestures. I couldn't remember one I loved until he said, when I proposed on the beach on a horse. I admitted that was a good one, maybe because the horse wasn't in our living room. But that's the thing about romantics. Don't romanticize them. They can be hit or miss. As it turned out, there was a woman in Ian's office who had two toddlers and a linoleum kitchen, and the kids and her husband loved the snow machine. In fact, they had so much fun, they invited more children to enjoy more snow on Christmas Day. So maybe the gift was just early. Several years and one linoleum kitchen early. And it is not lost on me that this gift ended a hard year when Ian and I got further from, not closer to, having children of our own. But it was also a year, despite our indoor snowstorm, that Ian and I got closer to, not further from, each other.
Pamela Adlon, reading Cindy Shupak's essay, In Marriage.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Beware of big boxes. Pamela is currently the co-creator, writer, producer, director, and star of the critically acclaimed FX series Better Things. Season 1 is streaming now. We'll link to it at our website, wbur.org/modernlove. So, any excitement since the snow machine? We'll speak with Cindy and Ian after the break.
Living Proof products make life easier. Just ask Bex from New Zealand.
So yeah, I'm currently living in a van and driving across the US with my boyfriend. So both Prime Style Extender and Perfect Hair Aid Dry Shampoo allow me to go longer between washes, so my hair stays cleaner for longer, which when I was working in Africa and now currently living in a van is great for me because it's a little longer between showers.
Use the code PRIME at livingproof.com for a free travel-size Prime Style Extender with your $20 order.
This is Modern Love. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. When we said that we spoke with Cindy Shupak and Ian, it's true. That's because Cindy was the one who actually suggested that Ian join her in the studio. 13 years together hasn't dulled his commitment to keeping things interesting, but that doesn't mean they agree on all of his choices. For example, Ian turned 50 back in October, and he wanted to do something special, something different.
There was an incident with some Thai wish balloons. And I guess we should explain our history with these Thai wish balloons, which was kind of romantic, which is how all these things start. So when we were trying to have a baby, which took 5 years of sort of trying everything and lots of heartache and disappointment, and we finally adopted our daughter, Olivia, who we're madly in love with, and she's 5 now, almost 6. Anyway, we had been in Thailand and on one Valentine's Day, and we had lit this wish balloon, which is kind of a tradition there, this giant balloon, and it has a flame underneath it, and you light it and you make a wish, and it goes up into the sky and goes and goes and goes until it disappears. Anyway, so Ian has since found on the internet where all these
every romantic gesture can be recreated with a little bit of internet research. It can be done in the privacies of your own home.
And sometimes outside your home would be better. Anyway, on his birthday, we were out on the beach, which seemed perfectly safe, with a bunch of friends, and he was lighting them, and I was totally game, right? I tried for a long time to block the wind and help him light it and set it off, but then it didn't, so we were walking back to our house, and we passed through this alley that's between condos, and I guess
And I'm not letting go.
And it was... I didn't know he wasn't letting go, but suddenly I turn around, and he and his friends are trying to light this wish balloon away from the wind, and it does light, and it lifts up and lodges itself into the balcony of an apartment.
For 2 seconds, and comes right back out.
It felt longer than that.
It popped out.
It was not 2 seconds.
And I would have been up there in like 30 seconds.
How would you have gone up there?
There was a staircase then. It would have been fine. And it's like a closed balcony.
And then it got worse because it dislodged, which seemed miraculous. Like, oh, somehow Ian manages to get through these things and I shouldn't worry. And then lodged itself into power lines.
Coated power lines.
Oh my God. I seriously had an image of the whole, of everything exploding.
Despite all the laughing now, the snow machine incident came at a very hard time when Ian and Cindy were trying everything to get pregnant.
The baby thing, as hard as it was, we were either on the same page or respectful of whatever the other needed, if we needed a break, and that seemed endless. Ian really wanted a child as soon as we got married, which is, I think, why men get married a lot of times. It's like men who are happy with their lives, but what you might want to finally settle down and marry when you want a baby. So he really was ready to have a baby, and it took us such a long time, and he was very respectful of the time I needed. So in that case, we were really on the same page, and the snow machine really did stand out as kind of a moment where we were just on totally different pages. I think that's why it felt maybe so dire.
With these gestures, you never really have time to, you know, practice them or...
Why not?
Because that would totally destroy the moment. It
yeah,
was for
I
you.
Guess so.
And it
You're
was
right.
like, that was okay. it. So it was cute. And what's it, the worst thing that would have happened was, you know, we would have gotten some sud stuff on our clothes for 2 seconds, but it was a great idea.
Many people, after that Modern Love piece came out, wrote on the New York Times Facebook site and in comments that I was just ungrateful and didn't deserve this guy and what a romantic thing. And there was a lot of that. I think all the people who agreed with me maybe just sat quietly and were grateful they didn't have a snow machine in their house. But the people who thought I didn't deserve Ian and that I should have enjoyed it were boisterous. So that was a little just interesting and gave me pause.
Not educational? Not educational at all? Just interesting? Informative, maybe? Just guessing? I don't know. Toss it out there. Still, I mean, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad she wrote the essay about it. I'm glad we're still laughing about it. And chances are I'll do it again or something very, very similar.
No, it'll be something very different. It'll be something I'm completely unprepared for. That's the beauty of it.
I love doing this kind of stuff. It cracks me up, and that's great fuel, and they're really fun to do.
And I would say, I know when I was... When I was single for a long time and didn't marry until late in life and had kind of what I thought was already a big life that I loved and traveled and had friends and...
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
I really felt like I didn't want to marry someone unless it would make my life bigger. I would be forced to grow and, you know, I think I asked for the snow machine in a way. I deserved the snow machine, and I wouldn't have really, in retrospect, wanted a life with you and without it, because it's a big part of our story, I guess.
Cindy Shupak and her husband, Ian Wallach. Cindy has won 2 Emmys and 3 Golden Globes as a TV writer and producer. Her credits include Divorce, Better Things, Modern Family, Sex and the City, and Everyone Loves Raymond. She's also written 2 comic memoirs, including The Longest Date, Life as a Wife, from which this modern love essay was excerpted. Ian works as a lawyer in Los Angeles. Pamela Adlon has something else to add to this story, and so does Dan Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times. More in a minute.
Modern Love, the podcast, is made possible by MeUndies, producing the most comfortable underwear you've ever experienced. Each pair, both men's and women's, has a touch of special fabric made with raw materials that are scientifically proven to be 3 times softer than cotton. If they aren't the most comfortable, best-feeling undies you've ever had, they'll refund you and let you keep your first pair free. And right now, you can get 20% off your first order at MeUndies.com/modern. They deliver right to your door with free shipping. So don't wait. Go to MeUndies.com/modern right now.
Dan Jones, editor of the Modern Love column, says this essay, despite its comedic tone, really communicates a lot about the reality of long-term relationships.
This piece made me laugh so many times about just the true aspects of marriage, particularly where it applies to opposites attracting and how you can first be drawn to someone for how different they are from you, and then those differences become these glaring sources of conflict. And in Cindy's story in particular, you know, he's this outgoing, fun-loving, proposing on a horse on the beach kind of guy. And she thinks all these things are romantic and fun during their courtship phase. But then these are the exact same impulses, which are sort of fundamentally different from who she is. But the way that Cindy just gets at these flashpoints in marriage, and, you know, she is a longtime writer for Sex and the City and certainly knows what the funny, quirky moments in relationships and dating, and she knows that world through and through.
Dan Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times. If you want to hear more about Dan's thoughts on love, check out his book, Love Illuminated, exploring life's most mystifying subject with the help of 50,000 strangers. Special thanks to Pamela Adlon for reading this week's essay. Turns out that Pamela, Cindy, and Ian go way back, and their friendship started, naturally, on a set.
I played a girl named Crystal Baker. And that was the name of the episode. And she was a pregnant teen who has no idea she's pregnant. And I go into labor, and the doctor's looking at me and going, "Crystal, breathe, you're having a baby." And I was in a mall trying to steal something with my friend, and I'm in big hoop earrings going, "That's impossible." And I give birth to this little preemie, and the baby daddy was Ian, and he was like in the military. So that's how Ian and I met. And then years later, I hired Cindy to write a draft of a script for my new show called Better Things. And then she asked me to read this, her personal story for her. And she's somebody who inspires me. And she's somebody that I love very much. And they are such good people. I love them.
Pamela and Cindy both write for FX's Better Things, which just received a Writers Guild Award nomination for Best New Series. Never miss an episode of this podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also join our Facebook community at facebook.com/modernlove. Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Perotti, and Amory Sievertson. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.